Grave Tone.
Welcome to Grave Tone Podcast, where horror comes to life in every form it takes. I'm Megan.
And I'm Arthur.
And it is officially time for us to start our Fantasia review.
Megan's so excited. It's great.
I can't.
Talking about it all week.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. And now we're here. We're kicking things off with a big one. It's not the first film we've seen, but it is Correct. The first film that you guys are going to be hearing about throughout our coverage.
The first film we've seen, which will be dropping this weekend
somewhere.
Was Her Private Hell.
Yes.
It is one of those movies that we need to sit on and really think about it. So we decided to switch it around a little bit and drop this one today, which is...
Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma. I was so happy. I had a feeling when they started revealing the lineup for the festival, because this film, if you don't know, is getting a wide theatrical release on August 7th.
Yeah, very soon.
And when that does happen, very often Fantasia's able to squeeze in some of the wider releases when they're getting a theatrical release within a few weeks. So I was really hoping that this would be on the list, and I'm so very happy to confirm that it was, and we were able to see it today because it had its Canadian premiere at Fantasia today, July 17th. Well, it's no longer July 17th.
It's 18th now because it is 1 o'clock in the morning.
Correct. It was a late night showing, and we're home and we're very tired, but...
It was totally worth it.
Yeah.
And we also heard the director's writer as well.
Yes.
And
star.
The main star
Correct.
Of the movie. They were in the audience and we got to stay and listen to their opinion and filmmaking of this, which was absolutely awesome.
Yes. So for those who are unaware, this is, I want to say, the third feature film by writer-director Jane Schonbrunn, who has previously directed a number of different films, but I believe that their features, they did have like a couple of credits prior to this, but their major debut was in 2021 with We're All Going to the World's Fair, followed by the very widely successful I Saw the TV Glow in 2024.
Known. Yes.
Yeah, which is very known. We have seen I Saw the TV Glow. We have not seen We're All Going to the World's Fair, but I have heard very excellent things about that film as well. And this is their third full feature film, essentially, which kind of everything sort of fits together. A lot of their films explore the idea of self and identity and finding one's identity in some capacity. And this film is certainly no exception to that.
No exception, only in the sense that it is much more happier than the other movies, because the other movies were a little bit darker, let's put it that way.
Yeah, much more melancholy in their tone, I would say. Particularly, like I said, we've seen I Saw the TV Glow, and I would argue that that's it. There's a lot more about repression and the unhappiness of finding oneself in that film versus this one. This one really explores the joy, and this is something that Jane Schonbrunn did bring up multiple times during the Q&A portion of everything at the end of the evening when they were speaking about the movie, that this is something that was supposed to be examining the idea of self-identity, but from a much more joyful standpoint. And I think that that really carries through.
Oh yeah, very much did. It is so fun, this movie. It is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Self-referential.
Yes.
It is super meta. It laughs at itself.
100%.
It's seriously you don't know what to expect when you're watching this movie and you are never taking out of it.
No, this was from the moment that I had seen the trailer for this a number of months ago. I was really looking forward to it because I thought it was just going to be a really interesting take on things. It is sort of described as a slasher in a way, but what it really is also an examination of queerness and self-discovery through the lens of a satirical look at slasher films and a breakdown of those, but not in a way that is funny and does poke fun at the tropes and things, but also demonstrates such a love for the subgenre at the same time.
It was the biggest homage
to
the slasher genre in general.
100%. And it has this really lovely balance between making fun of things, but also very much showcasing how much Jane Schonbrunn obviously loves this subgenre of horror, for sure.
Yeah, so much. Just the opening sequence is absolutely hilarious and amazing. It basically goes through the whole trope of, I guess, super sequel movies, something that does really, really well. And then, you know, they make a sequel and then they make another one and then eventually it starts to degrade.
And then they make and 20 then, and they go to space.
Yeah, and they go to space things. And then they make games and they make little bobs and then they make arcades and then it becomes a, you know, a comic book or a graphic novel, whatever it is. And then eventually it becomes a reboot.
Yeah.
Which kind of like what this movie is about. What's the synopsis of this movie?
Yes. Let me read the IMDb synopsis before we kind of like get into first feelings about things. And then some stuff. I know the film hasn't been released yet, so we're going to be very careful with what we are and aren't spoiling. A director making a slasher sequel becomes obsessed with casting the original film's final girl, leading both women into psychological and sexual chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and there's so much more, but yes, you know.
But in terms of the basic general plot, yeah, that's definitely what the movie is doing and what the story is, for sure.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I agree. It is, it there's so much more things that are going on in this.
Yeah.
Like I said, it is super meta to begin with.
Oh, definitely.
But it does have layers that are not, it's not one of those that you have to kind of like really think about it. It is pretty much out there.
Yeah.
It's pretty self-explanatory.
There's some ambiguity for sure. There's some level of interpretation.
But like less than Isolated TV Glow. Because I know we watched it.
True.
We loved it. We understood it. But then we're like, we're going to watch a breakdown.
A little bit more of a breakdown to understand some of the nuance of it.
This one doesn't really need a breakdown. You kind of, you get it. You know, so it's a little bit more straightforward that way, I guess.
That's it. And like, look, a lot of the, you know, exactly what I mentioned before, a lot of Jane Schoenbrunn's themes within their films are a breakdown of, to do with like, you know, queerness and discovery of one's sexuality and like the trans experience and things like that. And neither of us have had that experience. And so I don't think there's anything, you know, particularly wrong with taking a look at things and kind of like looking for a breakdown and stuff like that to understand those themes a little bit more deeply. And I think it's been interesting to kind of do that a little bit. And this film does explore some of that as well. But yeah, I would agree in a bit more of a linear fashion to a degree. And while just being wrapped up in this really wonderful package of just exploring the slasher subgenre, which is a subgenre that is so beloved by so many people, and does manage to explore this subgenre and make fun of it and how ridiculous all of the sequels and everything gets after a while also showcasing things from the horror lover's perspective and how even though we know part 12 is garbage, I still love it anyway and I still want to watch it and I'm still going to examine it even though it probably doesn't need to be examined and it was like a total fucking cash grab and whatever, that you still have a love for it in spite of all of that, even when you get into these like ridiculous sequels down the line.
So I'm guessing those were your first impressions of the movie, essentially.
Kind of, yeah. That's it. I would say that those were kind of like my first feelings about it. And I loved the breakdown of it. I loved the performances in the film. I thought they were absolutely fantastic. I'll run through cast for people in a little bit, but I thought they were excellent from start to finish. It has such interesting visuals, which is definitely something that Jane Schoenbrunn tends to have in their films, but they're all so stylistically different while also kind of having that weird kind of ambiguity to them to an extent throughout the course of the film. Things get like crazier and less realistic looking the further we get into the story, and that seems
and
to
it
be
makes sense
theme.
With the story so like it you kind of have to watch it to understand a little bit.
That's it. But there's a lot of great stuff to really appreciate about it for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I agree, same thing. I really really loved it. I was not ready at how funny it was
going to be.
Funny. And not because there's like dumb jokes or whatever it is. Like I said, it is very meta self-referential. So some of the stuff there, first of all, lands really well.
100%.
Keeps the movie really going. It is entertaining. It is not over the board in any way, you know. And just kind of like the whole thing is so entertaining. And if you have a lover, if you have a love for horror movies in general, I mean, that's probably why you're here. Thank you very much. Or even for the slasher genre, you will absolutely love this movie.
Yes.
There's everything that a slasher movie should have 100%. Is there, but it is also made fun of in the most tasteful way.
Yeah. You know? Yes, I think that's actually an excellent way of describing it is that it has this beautiful balance of poking fun at something while also being an homage to it in the best way possible, yeah, and showcasing how much love there is for it. And I loved it. I thought it was so fun. So great.
No, seriously, it's great. If you listen to this, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think about it. Some people, you know, discovered some other episodes through episodes within this podcast.
Sure,
and left comments left and right. So first of all, thank you very much for doing this. Mm-hmm. Also, thank you very much for rating it. It helps a lot.
Yes.
And as you know, yes, we're going to go into a little bit of a spoiler territory, but it is not going to be heavy spoilers. Like Megan just said, it is not going to be released for a while. So we are going to cover some of the more major plot points, but without revealing anything too aggravating or spoilery.
Yeah. Like, I know we say this all the time. We're like, we're not going to get too spoilery with it. And then we kind of like, sometimes we do. And I'm like, whoopsie doodles when we get to the end
of the episode.
It's not
that bad. We also say spoilers ahead.
We do. Yeah. We always give an alert. But I'm saying that even going into this one, and I'm still going to insert our spoiler alert regardless, because it's still a few weeks out from release, we're not going to get into like too much heaviness with it. And I think we're going to keep things very broad in this case when we're talking about it.
Sure.
Okay. So let me run through cast, because the cast is fucking fantastic in this film.
I know.
I'm going to try to stick to, I guess, at least the people that are like quote unquote real and not actors within the movie kind of thing, because that starts to get a little bit funky and we can kind of like get into it as we do. But we know that this is based on a film, right?
I guess. Yeah.
Right. So.
Oh, I understand what you mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
So our lead character's name is Chris, and she's played by Hannah Einbinder, who is now most well known for Hacks, obviously, and is excellent. We really have to watch that show. We've like.
It's on the list. I know.
It's on the list. We've not gotten around to it.
It's gonna happen.
I know. We have the character of Billy Presley, played by Gillian Anderson. Of course, the wonderful, fabulous Gillian Anderson. I'm never upset to see her in anything. I love her. I think she's
great in everything.
Fantastic. We have the character of Little Death. I'll explain that later. Played by Jack Haven, who is making a reappearance after having appeared as the character Maddie in I Saw the TV Glow. They're reappearing in this film to play the character. Yeah, did you not realize?
That was Maddie from I Saw the TV Glow, like the neighbor?
Yes.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, 100%. That was them. They played the character of Little Death in this.
You don't see
their face quite as much in this film.
No, barely.
So, yes.
Fuck,
so,
okay. Yeah.
So they're That's reappearing. Awesome. We have the character of Jasmine Savoy Brown from Yellow Jackets and the Scream franchise, all of like the requels and all of the updated, who plays the character of Mary.
Oh, yeah.
Or Mari, sorry. We have the character, we have Sarah Sherman, who plays Chris's agent, who I love that she doesn't get a name. I think that's so funny, who shows up. And then we've got a few other people here and there, namely in terms of like character actors, Patrick Fischler, who plays the character of Rudolph, who's kind of a harbinger. That's something that's sort of explained a little bit throughout the course of the film, as well as Kevin McDonald, who's an actor from Montreal. So I love that so much. Who plays the character of the county sheriff, quote unquote, or Anthony is what the character is credited as someone who makes an appearance in the film, but is also a person who lives in the town in which the film was shot. The Camp Miasma films were shot. So yeah, those are all really fun. These are people who are like pretty iconic. Like Kevin McDonald's a really iconic Canadian actor. He's been in a ton of stuff. He was in Kids in the Hall back in the day, and like he voiced a character in Lilo and Stitch. He voices Pleakley in Lilo and Stitch.
Cool.
And he was in Sky High. Like he's been in a ton of different stuff. He's just one of those people that you see when you grow up here, you see him over and over and over again.
Yeah,
and I love that. So yeah, that's kind of general breakdown. There are a few other people in it that are fantastic, but those are kind of like your major players that you're seeing throughout the course of the movie. So
that's
So shall we, do we want to do digs?
Are we doing digs? We always do it before the spoilers.
No, I don't know. I'm just asking because it's like a few weeks out from release, so I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, we're doing digs. What the hell?
All right, fuck then. What are your digs? Damn. How much did you dig the movie? Jesus. Do you see what I have to put up with here?
I would.
Do you see the abuse that I sustain on this podcast?
What are you talking about? You're not following the format. You know it's...
I asked a question!
It's the format!
Okay, it's 1 o'clock in the morning and we're obviously getting annoyed with each other. What are your digs for this movie?
And the cats are loud in the background again. Okay, so first of all, like we were saying, driving back, whatever it is, because it is so funny, but unexpectedly, at least when I was watching it, that's just one extra dig from me.
Yeah, fair.
I am easily giving it an 8.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Easily. That's like given like a fry to a seagull.
Nice. Wow. That was really
That's specific. Not a saying, but no. It is now.
No. Uh-huh. It is. I mean, it's a pretty apt one, though. Exactly. I say it's like a good little metaphor to throw in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, no, honestly, no additional notes, especially for this like early part of the episode. Mm. No additional notes. 8 out of 10. Easily 8 out of 10. I might even increase that over time.
Okay.
If I like have the opportunity to rewatch it again before the end of the year. So we'll have to kind of see how that
shakes out.
That'd
be great. I would definitely watch it again.
100%. Yeah. It was so much fun. Okay, so let's get into the more spoilery side of things. We can talk a little bit more broadly about some plot points and some character beats and things like that, and get into our favorites and all the stuff that we really loved about it. As Arthur has already mentioned, thank you so very much for everybody who does rate and review the episodes. If you are listening and you would like to do so, thank you so much. It helps us so very much, and it only takes a few minutes of your time. And Gary, our ghoul, is digging a grave in your honor. So we really appreciate that, and he's putting in all the hard work. Gary, get over here.
Speaking of which.
And give us the spoiler warning.
You've been warned. Spoilers ahead.
So, as mentioned a little bit in the synopsis to a degree, the film does follow Hannah Einbinder's character of Chris. She is a filmmaker who's gotten a little bit of buzz from some more indie stuff that she's worked on. And it's given her the opportunity to be provided with the Camp Miasma, which is a whole slasher franchise that exists in this universe. She's been given the opportunity to reboot.
Yeah. So franchise. Kind of like I mentioned, the whole intro of that is the storyline of this franchise.
Yes.
It is essentially, you know, it became huge and then it obviously died down because they had like 13 movies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now essentially it's kind of like a dormant zombie IP, if you want to call it like
that.
That's
what she calls it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what she calls it. She calls it a zombie IP, but it is a dormant IP and... Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. She gets the chance to reboot it in her own way.
Yes. And she has a massive love for this franchise. Yes. She's obsessed with it. So this is a dream come true for her, essentially. And one of the things that she's given as an opportunity is to set up a meeting with Billy Presley, who plays the original final girl in the first Camp Miasma film. So obviously this is a huge deal for her.
Because she also didn't return in the sequels.
No, she refused to.
And then
to.
Essentially became like a weird recluse of Hollywood type of thing
stopped
that lives
acting,
in a forest.
Stopped acting, stopped doing any of that stuff. Exactly.
So and there's like that notoriety, I guess, or whatever you want to call it around
it's
her.
It's the air of mystery, right, that she maintains by having like not really continued to do anything.
Yeah.
So the two of them, that's it, come together first professionally, which then obviously, like, you know, there are other sort of aspects of things that develop throughout the course of the film in order to figure out how to reboot something like this and what it means to both of them. And then more, I guess, more broadly, what it does become, particularly for Chris, is a real self-exploration, a real sort of way for her to come into her own, both professionally, but then also
with
personally
her sexuality
as well, and within her sexuality. Yeah. She is a queer character in the film, and she's currently in like a polyamorous relationship with the character of Mari, and you know, she's obviously not as happy about that as she claims to be at the beginning
of the
film.
Too, but like
and
the main,
she's got some blocks with regards to sex.
That's it, exactly. That's the important part.
Yeah, in her own life and her own way that she feels about it and the way that she treats sex as an act, essentially. And so the two of them together are able to kind of break through a lot of her feelings about those
things. In like
things.
The weirdest way, the most insane way.
I know, but I loved it.
Oh no,
so
it's great. I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm just saying it's yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
It's very interesting.
Oh, for sure. I mean, listen, this film is definitely something that is an exploration of queerness for these characters. There's like, you know, the title of the film, I think, gives away that there's a fair bit of sexuality throughout the course of the film.
Oh, you think
film.
So?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, apparently some people who were sitting around us did not
Look, I don't
realize.
Know. Look, I don't know. There were like one or two people who left like really weirdly abruptly during this movie.
Hey, whatever. Something happened. I hope nothing happened. So
yeah, hopefully they didn't have like an emergency phone
call
coming in or something.
Yeah, that's it. Hopefully not. But anyways.
Anyway. Yeah. So it's done so beautifully. I think also I'm thinking about things because, like Arthur mentioned earlier, we did see Her Private Hell, which was the opening film of the festival. Yeah. And I'm not going to talk about it right now because, again, I'm still thinking about it. And we're also going to sit down and talk about it more and
listen to the next episode.
Yeah. We'll give you that episode over the weekend for sure. And that film tackles some similar theme with regards to queerness, but not entirely, but it does tackle queerness in a way that I didn't like versus this film, which feels much more genuine in
That makes sense.
The way that the characters are exploring what's happening between them. Mm-hmm. And I really, really, really loved that. And I found that the performances were fabulous.
So obviously there's a lot of things that we've enjoyed about this movie. And one of the things that I would say that I liked, and I am not sure how I'm going to explain this because this is a little bit complicated because I can't say the whole story. But anyways, the way that throughout the movie, the more that I guess the main character was able to break through her sexuality, but also come to terms with her as a creator and what she's trying to do with this movie. Because, you know, kind of like she goes there and she meets with Billy, who lives in the original Camp Miasma in this universe.
She lives in and the place where the first film was shot.
And she lives there, but it's like an abandoned camp.
It is now,
and it's like winter, so it's just really in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
Essentially, but it is like the original location, right? So for the director of this movie, it is like a really crazy thing. It's amazing, right? And she has like a big adoration for this movie because she saw it when she was 8 and whatever. So what I'm saying is that how they transitioned the movie itself becoming the actual movie, the original movie.
Yes.
Because there's like a movie within a movie, right? Yes. And the way that this film and story transitions from what is currently happening, like the reality of it, let's say, to actually being inside that original movie. I know it's hard to understand. You will see what I mean when you watch it.
Watch it. I hope I hope you've watched it if you're listening to this episode, genuinely.
But it is amazing how it's done, and it just kind of like represents something that is important to this movie. And it's just a very smart way of doing it. You know, like the backgrounds become a little bit more backdrops. You know, they become more flat.
Absolutely.
It becomes a little bit kind of like it has that magical cinematic glow type of thing to it, whatever it is. There's a lot of elements that come to it.
Yeah.
But just the way that it's done and what it means is fucking awesome, and it's super smart.
I agree. It's really, it's incredibly intelligently written.
Yes.
And very cleverly done. So I loved that. There were like a lot of great aspects of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that my first favorite sort of thing would probably have to do with, I mean, overarchingly, obviously, the stylization of it, but all of the small details. The opening scenes of this film are brilliant.
The opening sequence?
Yes, portrayal of, like, you know, the way that slasher franchises will sometimes blow up and there are a bazillion sequels and there's merch that's made from them and stuff like that. There's a little wind-up toy of the killer called Little Death.
Yeah, in the Camp Miasma that is films. The killer. It's Little
and
Death.
And it's like one of those little ones that, like, its little feet go over. Yeah, I want it. Can I have one? It's so cute.
Probably.
I want it. And Jane Schonburn during the Q&A indicated that there's a portion of the cold open, or the opening, I should say, during the credits of the film, where we see a Camp Miasma board game.
Yeah, board game.
Apparently someone on the production design team made that board game, and it is, like, playable.
Like, fully. Like, they made the board and the characters, and there's, like, a rule book and everything.
There's a rule book. You have an actual story that you follow, and there is a goal within the gap.
That's fucking awesome.
That's crazy. And I love that. And
they should make it a
thing. I love that they were also impressed by it. They didn't even really realize that it was happening. And then they were like, yeah, no, this is like a whole game that works. And then Jane's like, what the fuck? What? Crazy. Wild. But I loved that the posters. I loved like the style of the font that was used. I loved all of the crazy overacting that's happening within the Camp Miasma, like the clips from the film that you're getting. Oh, so good. I loved them.
Yeah. It was so fabulous. It's, it is real well done. I keep talking about that opening sequence because it is funny, but also just says a story through images, essentially.
And it is for horror fans. If you are a slasher fan...
Yeah, if not, you won't... It's not that you won't really get it. Like, no. You obviously understand, but there's a deeper meaning to it. That's it. Yeah, it's appreciated is the right word for it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There's just so much to love about it. And knowing also that this film tackles some really interesting themes to do with how we have love for these franchises, but also while also admitting that there are problematic elements to them.
Problematic, you know, elements or just ridiculous elements.
Correct. Yeah, that's it. You know, like, yes, Friday the 13th is obviously a massive inspiration behind the Camp Miasma film series that's created.
I mean, in one of those headlines in the beginning, it says, move over, Jason, Camp Miasma, little death is coming to whatever, take over the world.
Yeah, you know, they have, the sequels have similar titles or they follow a similar vein. Like, the third one is in 3D. The third Friday the 13th is in 3D. The sixth film, which we see part of, played when she like picks up a DVD of it, Chris, and she puts it on. The final girl, I guess, or one of the characters in that film is named Megan. The final girl in Friday the 13th Part 6 is named Megan as well.
There you go.
Which, why would I not remember that? My namesake is there for a reason. So, you know, like those types of things. But I also love that it tackles, that's it, the problematic aspects of it in the sense that, you know, a lot of older slashers were very homophobic in their undertones about things.
Right.
And it does tackle something like... Well,
a lot of it
like,
started like in the 60s, 70s type of thing, right?
So. And it does tackle some of the elements of like something that can be problematic the way that sleepaway camp can be problematic in the sense that there's a lot of love for that original film, especially in that franchise. And it's considered to have, you know, one of the best twist endings of any slasher ever. However, it does push kind of a very transphobic rhetoric that I think you maybe people wouldn't have really paid attention to at that time, but is certainly something that's pretty glaringly obvious now. And there's a lot of talk about that and, you know, realization throughout the course of this film, like what those movies did, where you can love them while also acknowledging their faults that they have.
Right. And that's kind of like, is the story of the movie within the movie, right? Is that like Little Death, the killer there? It is a trans person, I guess, essentially.
Yes, it is, yeah.
That's it. The whole story is that they go to the sleepaway camp, and then a couple of days of the week, they are in the boys' barracks and everything, and then they're a boy, essentially, and then the other couple of days of the week, they're with the girls and stuff, so it's a whole thing, and then, you know, they get bullied and essentially drowned.
Yes.
And that's how this whole thing starts.
Yes, and it's all spoken about in a very cold and, like, very dismissive sort of way by the characters in the movie who are, like, talking about the lore and things like that, right? So, like, it admits all of the problematic elements to it, and it's very sort of, like, self-referential in the
that's
way
it, that
this
what
is
I'm
written,
saying.
Which is very clever.
That's what I'm saying. So I would say that that's my second favorite thing is that it is the movie within the movie, but the way that it is written, because, you know, you get that thing, you get the whole, you know, the harbinger who's telling you, oh, you're doomed.
Oh my God,
you're doomed.
It
was so fucking
it
funny.
It was so funny.
Oh God. And then, you know, they, I laughed out loud so much. I mean, everyone was laughing out loud, but you know, when that's it, they're like leaving the gas station and they get to the camp. And then the two drivers, or the driver and the passenger, they turn around to the whole band of, I guess, teenagers who are supposed to be the monitors for the camp, whatever it is. And they're like, we've arrived and we're out of gas. Yo, I was
and they like
dying. Yeah, that's it. And they're like, hey.
Oh my God, it's so ridiculous.
It's so hilarious.
I know.
Fuck, man.
The dialogue of the Camp Miasma movie within the movie is very funny.
Yeah.
It is, like, the whole way through.
All of it. The kills are absolutely hilarious. They're absolutely over the top. You get someone who, like, gets their head cut off, and it's just a fountain.
It's so good.
A 3 meter, 6 feet fountain
so funny.
Blood. It is absolutely hilarious.
It's so good.
There's a bunch of kills that references, of course, other franchise kills and everything. All of that. All of that. The writing and the movie within the movie is great.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of wove my first favorite into my second favorite to a degree because of like the slasher bit of it. So apologies for that. But anyway, that is kind of where I'm at. So I think following all of that,
right,
my third favorite, there's a lot of favorite.
There's a lot. Yes, I know. So but good. We are staying within the three because if not, it's going to be an hour.
I know. We don't have time. not true. We don't have the energy. We'll be here all night. So I think that in that same vein, my third favorite is the way that, and I have follow-ups to this, but the way that as the name or the title of the film suggests, the weaving together of the sexual components and the violent, like, death components of the film within the film and how they weave together. And my main, I guess, point about that, right, is that I'm surprised nobody brought this up during the Q&A actually with the director, and I'm always too shy to ask questions. So is that, you know, the killer is called Little Death.
Yes.
You know, and if you think about that in French, it's Le Petit Mort.
Yes, of course.
Which is a French expression for an orgasm. Yes. Right. So again, you're kind of like, see like how all of those aspects of things are woven together.
Smart.
And yes. You know, how there's a component, again, I won't get into too much, but there's a component of like how the death within the film leads to like a really intense orgasm being triggered for the final girl, and like all of this stuff, like all of these like components. I thought it was very tongue-in-cheek, but it was very clever the way that all of that was woven together.
Oh no, it was really very clever. That's it. Very smart.
Yes.
You know, it was funny. We cannot talk too much about it because it just reveals way too much. It's kind of like one of the main plot points of the movie, or the subplot, I guess.
No, it is. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Of it. Yeah. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. 100%. What is your third favorite?
Oh, God. I can't choose. I can't choose. I love the color palette. I love the fucking set designs. I love the character design. Little Death is fucking cool.
Oh, I know. Yeah, you know what? We didn't talk enough about that. Make that your third favorite. That's your
I was
going to
say something else, but fine.
All right.
Whatever. Little Death is fucking awesome.
Yeah, there's such a funny, interesting, kooky, like, mix of different things. The way that they're filmed a lot is also really cool, like, within, like, the Camp Miasma film.
Yeah.
I love that. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
All the killing sequences, so good.
It is, like, they're wearing essentially a transparent hazmat suit in a way.
Yeah.
Right? And on the head is a box made out of a box within a box.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a recursive box type of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just think of like a square, and there's a smaller square drawn into it, and then a smaller and a smaller until you get to the middle. So that's kind
of
that.
And there's a lot of imagery of that throughout the film as well.
A lot everywhere, of course. Yes. And their weapon is a fucking spear.
Yeah.
It's a giant spear that it is like super powerful with, because it can just like stab someone and lift it with one finger and basically kind of like wave them around like a flag. Seriously, great character design. The way that the actor, or I don't know if it was maybe the actor's choice or the character
I'm not design sure, but they did
blocked.
They did a great
was
job.
Was a great, great job.
Yeah, shout out Jack Haven. Like, because I really liked them. I loved them and I saw the TV Glow.
Mm-hmm.
But their character has lines and they've got a lot more like expression and everything like that. And you see their face a lot more. You don't see them quite as much, obviously, in this, but they were just excellent. Like the whole physicality of the character.
The
was
physicality,
great.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Seriously, you don't really see the face as much.
Yeah.
But it was great. I also have to say that I liked a little bit, I guess, the whole, what is it, psychological craziness of the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it is kind of shown in the trailer for a second when, you know, it's kind of like that pink flesh, whatever it is, where Little Death lives type of thing.
Yes.
I was like, that's weird. I'm not sure if it reflected well what is happening in the movie. It was just a little bit bizarre.
It's interesting.
But I didn't hate it.
It's interesting because you're kind of like, I'm not entirely sure of this, but I like it.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah, it's one of those like weird like, why?
Yes.
Because it didn't really go too far, you know, but I was like, I don't hate it.
No, that's
it. It's weird enough.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will say that's it. We went to see this with our friend Raph from Stabbed and Bothered. Go follow him.
Yeah.
If you don't follow him already, he's got a lot of great content. And he brought up an excellent point as well when we were kind of chatting about the film after we watched it, which was that it's such a great exploration of how sometimes when we're trying to escape from certain parts of ourselves, it's easier for us to lose ourselves in the things that we love and like the media yes. that we love to consume.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's a big component of Chris's character. And there's dialogue to the effect that, you know, it's easier for her sometimes to pretend that she's one of the characters in the Camp Miasma films, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that does something to ease certain tensions that she has within herself. And that's, yeah, it's just brilliant. It's so smart and so great. And it was so interesting.
I agree. Seriously, it is very good. You should definitely see it. If you liked I Saw the TV Glow, or I guess kind of like that composition of the movie, this one is much brighter, much funnier, so much funnier.
Oh gosh, you know?
And I would say a little bit more like self-explanatory in a sense.
Sure, yeah. No, I agree. I think you're right. I think it's maybe a little bit more linear than some of their previous work. So that is probably going to be something that people will appreciate. And it's going to be just more universally appealing, I think, to a horror audience simply because it follows a slasher kind of format to a degree while inserting like psychological stuff into it as well. So it's very cool. Yeah,
exactly.
Loved it. Apparently Mooncake really liked it too.
Yeah, because he keeps shouting about it even though he didn't see it.
2 o'clock in the morning. Anyway. Hopefully if you guys are here, you've watched it and you had like good feelings about it as well. Definitely like leave us a comment or something. I'm really curious to know what other people's opinions about the film are. Like leave us a comment about this. I don't know. It's just, it was so great. I just want to talk about it with other people if I can. Like we said, I think Her Private Hell's coming next. We've also got some other films in the next few days upcoming. So I think we're going to be dropping like multiple episodes in quick succession.
Absolutely. Go check out. We have a whole section on the coverage if you want on the website at gravetonepod.com. There's a section literally on the front page for all of Fantasia Festival coverage.
Absolutely. And we're going to be updating our socials at Gravetone Pod very regularly too with mini reviews and letting you guys know kind of when episodes are dropping and what's live.
So yeah, because we might have episodes that will roll in a couple of movies together just because there's so much.
Oh, timeline-wise, we just don't have the time.
Yeah, it's wild.
So definitely check all of that out and follow us for all of the coverage that we have going on over these next few weeks.
Yeah.
But until then, guys, stay scared. Stay tuned.
Ciao, guys.